Let's review a little bit about powerful persuasive presentations. It's all about engineering your presentation before you give it, learning to discover who you're talking to, designing your message, and delivering it. We know that giving a great presentation is very different, extremely different, than giving just a presentation. Your goal is to get your audience to move a notch. If they were indifferent, you want to get them to move a little bit so they could see what you're talking about. If they were on your side, maybe you want to get them to do something to support what you're doing. If they were against you, maybe you want to get them a little more indifferent or a little more on your side or understand your point of view. So let's review a little bit the four R's of resistance. Why is it that your audience would say no to you? Why is it that you're not able to persuade them? The first, for most rookie presenters, is they didn't give them a reason. You vomited a list of features or reasons you thought were important to them why they should do it. You gave them a laundry list of things that they should be doing, a laundry list of reasons why your product or service is so superior, and it didn't resonate with them. You have to give them a reason. See, this is what's happening. If they've come to listen to you out of their own free will and choice, they already have a reason, and you need to tap into that. If they're sitting there and they're not sure why, you have to create a reason, an interest, a need, a want. What is it that they really want from you? What is it that will sway them to your persuasive message? The second one, they might not feel they have the resources. They might not feel they have the time. Maybe they don't have the money. Maybe they don't have the support. Maybe they don't have the ability. And back up a little bit as we talk about money. Everyone's so concerned about money. Everyone's fighting on price and bargaining and haggling over the investment. And less than 6% of things we buy are bought on price. If they say it's too expensive, if they use the money excuse, it's because you blew your presentation and didn't build the value. The next one is risk. There was too much risk. They either couldn't see themselves doing it, or you didn't give them an unbeatable guarantee. It doesn't matter whether it's fair or not. This is your business. This is your service. This is your presentation. You need to take all the risk. Now, understand, we only use guarantees when they're sitting on the fence, when they're starting to become interested. And you can take all the risk. That is your job. And we're able to do that. Then they say, well, I have everything to gain and nothing to lose. And you need to think about during your persuasive presentation, what is your unbeatable, no-risk, money-back guarantee? If you're not willing to give one, you don't believe in your product or service. The last one is rep. That's you. They didn't like you. People won't buy, even if they like it or need it, because they didn't like you. Of course, you're in denial there. That could never happen. But that's reality as I talk to your audiences. And that's an important concept. What if they don't like you? What if you don't have the credibility? What if you're not coming across as very persuasive? What if they assume you're not trustworthy or they don't like you? We've talked about borrowing the credibility of other people. One way to do that is what we call social validation. The reality is the greater the number of people who find any idea correct, the more the idea will be correct in their minds. When you mention something is the most popular, or the number one, or the fastest selling, or a New York Times bestseller, that's enough for most people to jump on board. That's why you see people salting tip jars when they're bartenders or playing the piano, or those that are playing musical instruments out on the streets. They put a couple dollars in there to salt it. That's social validation. That is telling you that other people did it, that it's okay to do it, and that you should do it. We've seen people falsify records on the internet. You'd go to a website and you'd see a list of 20 different software programs, and they were rated from the most popular, the one that was downloaded the most, to the one that was the least popular, that was downloaded the least. They artificially inflated the numbers. They took the worst one, number 20, put it to number 1, and it stayed there because more and more people would download it just because it's number 1. You walk into the bookstore, you see the bestsellers. When you go to a play, they make sure there's a standing ovation to prove to people that it was good. Even when participants were asked to view a political debate, they were watching the presidential candidates, and they found that just the presence of a Confederate or someone who cheered for one of the candidates influenced the participants' overall evaluation of that candidate in a positive manner. Obviously, when receiving information in a social setting, the audience can be skewed to perceive the information the way the group tends to hear it. And it's very important when you understand social validation is very different one-on-one than it is in a group setting. Because when we're in a group, there's something called de-individuation, where in a group we find ourselves less self-aware, we're less concerned how others will evaluate us, we're more anonymous, and we feel less responsible for our actions. I remember reading an article about a suicide jumper on a bridge near Seattle. They closed the bridge. They were trying to work with this person. Everybody was upset. They were honking their horns. They were late for work. And finally, people started rolling down their windows and saying, "Jump! Go ahead, jump! Do it! We're late for work! Jump!" Now, people would not do that one-on-one. The way we react at a concert, the way we react at a football game, is very different than when we are by ourselves. Now, on a sad note, the lady did jump off the bridge. On a good note, she did survive. But it's very important, a group setting. The whole group can be for you, give you a lot of social validation, or the group could turn against you. So when we feel this de-individuation, when we feel ourselves part of this group setting, it often causes us to say or do things that we would not normally feel comfortable with. Even during another study with trick-or-treaters, children, they would go to a door, they knock on the door, and they would say trick-or-treat. The person says, "Oh, phone's ringing, go ahead and take some candy." And they had cameras watching it. When the trick-or-treater was by themselves, only 7.5% would steal extra pieces of candy. But when they were in a group, that shot up to near 21%. So you need to take a look at your product, your service, your idea, your presentation, and create that social validation. A big way to do that, as we mentioned earlier in a previous audio, is to borrow the credibility of other people. And you need to do that with testimonials. Get as many testimonials as you can. When you have a great product or service and you've over-delivered, people are more than happy to give you a testimonial. You ask everybody for a testimonial. Because this is what a testimonial does. It increases your credibility, enhances your image, people's skepticism drops, and it's a form of social validation. But you have to do it in the right way. What type of testimonial should you use? First of all, you need to start asking people for testimonials. They're more than happy to do it. And expect them to give you one. Let them know ahead of time that's how you do your business, is through referrals and through testimonials. And make it easy for them. Write it out for them. Take a video camera and transcribe it. So, is that okay to write out someone's testimonial? You bet it is. You write it out and say, "Look, I'd appreciate your testimonial. This is what I remember. Please make the changes," and they make a few changes, and then they say, "Great, use it." And remember, I can't say this enough, that you can never have enough testimonials. But it's more than just asking. That's the first step. That's a big step. But you have to coach people and let them know what you want them to say. Because if you don't tell them what you want them to say, they'll say pretty much anything, and they'll say things that are nice, and they might flatter you a little bit, but they're useless to you as a testimonial. The first one is if you can get an income claim or some type of benefit claim, exactly what happened. Show them in 2 months how they made an extra $48,000. Another good part of that is that the person that they're reading about needs to be, "Well, I'm like you." And we use it all the time at the Persuasion Institute. See, a lot of people think, "Oh, I don't need coaching. I don't need persuasion coaching because I'm already doing real estate coaching or life mastery coaching or your entrepreneur coaching." And that's great. But some of our greatest success stories are people that knew that it didn't matter how much real estate coaching they had, they needed to add the persuasion element to be successful in real estate. And so when people read that, they think, "Wow, I'm like them. I have all these different coaching and training programs, but I'm not being successful. I need to add the gas to the vehicle to success. I need to add persuasion." And if you can get as much information as possible and post it, a photo, not just their initials, their name, where they're from, the state, as much as you can put down makes it more credible. Be short and be specific. Most testimonials are too long, and that's okay as long as you can shorten them up and make sure they're believable. We receive testimonials all the time where the numbers are too high. They're true, but for most people, they are not believable. Enhance your credibility and social validation through testimonials. Another aspect of your message and your presentation is understanding scarcity and urgency, or what we call psychological reactants. We know that opportunities are always more valuable and exciting when they're scarce and less available. Scarcity and urgency increases the value of your product. As a presenter, One of the worst things that can happen to you is the knee-jerk reaction of, wow, that's interesting, I like it, but you know what? I'm going to think about it. And if you give somebody 2 weeks to think about it, it'll take 2 weeks. You give them 4 months to think about it, they'll take 4 months. People need help making decisions. The challenge with scarcity has been overused, it's been abused, and a lot of times when presenters and persuaders use this, the knee-jerk reaction is the audience does not believe it. You need to create legitimate urgency, a way to help them to make a decision right now. Because if you've ever been in persuasion, you know the longer they think about it, the chances start to diminish that they're actually going to do it. So can you put restrictions? Maybe only bring 20 pieces of product and stop at 20. A time restriction, an information restriction, maybe a discount on the price, or even offering a few bonuses. We see this on online auctions. They drive us nuts. We get on eBay and we said, I'll pay $20 for that. And you say, I'm not going to pay more than the outbid notice comes, and you get stuck and you bid more and you bid more. Limit four is another way to create urgency. Look at the Home Shopping Network. They have a countdown clock and you can see people buying the product and they're actually running out. Limited supply. This price is only good for today. What can you do to create urgency, to create scarcity to the point they want to make a decision today? Because that's what a great persuader does. You help them make a decision they were going to already make anyway, but you want to make it sooner rather than later and reward them for doing that. And that's the critical twist with scarcity. Let me point this out. You have to have scarcity, some type of deadline, or people will not make a decision. But you want to buffer that with some type of reward. Let me give you an example. Let's say I'm persuading people to buy my Perfect Persuasion 12 audio CD set with the workbook and the manual. And I would say, this price is good for today. And for making a decision today, I'm also going to give you the CD on the psychology of objections, the DVDs on maximum influence. And I could make a list of bonuses that I would give them, and it's $1,000 worth of bonuses, so there's a scarcity, a reason to do it today, but I'm also going to give them bonuses for making that decision today. Always buffer your urgency, your scarcity, with some type of reward. Another aspect as we talk about the system of becoming a great presenter, a great persuader, is to know what you should do in the first 2 minutes, in the first 10 minutes, what you should include in your presentation. So let me give it to you. In the first 2 minutes of your presentation, hopefully you can have somebody introduce you that can give you all the credibility that you need. They can brag about you. Even though you wrote the introduction, they can brag about you and will not affect your credibility. It will only enhance it. So in the first 2 minutes, you have to create credibility. Whether somebody introduces you or it's a story or something happens where they know that you are the expert. You want to get three yeses. I would start a persuasive presentation. How many of you persuade for a living? How many of you like to double your income? They would say yes. And I'd have a series of questions to get as many yeses as possible. Because when I ask people they want to double their income, they say yes. And I say, well, there's two ways to do that. You can either work twice as hard or you can double your persuasion skills. And that launches me into the presentation. And also in that first 2 minutes, you want some type of a compliment. Build their esteem, build their ego. You're glad to be there. Why you like them, compliment them, praise them in the first 2 minutes. Now, in the first 10 minutes, you want some type of self-deprecating story. You need to be able to make fun of yourself. You need to show them that you can handle that. You can make fun of yourself. You are just like them. You've had embarrassing moments. You have failed. You have gone bankrupt. You have blown it. You've tripped on stage and fallen on your face. Whatever it is, show them that in the first 10 minutes. Also in the first 10 minutes, you want to do what we call the Zygarnik effect. This was developed by a Russian psychologist. He did some research and found that we remember things better when they're not completed. So you want to tease them in the first 10 minutes of things they're going to find out when they listen throughout the whole presentation. That you're going to give them the four ways to create instant trust with people. You're going to show them the three ways to become financially independent in 6 months. It's just like the news programs. You're getting ready to turn off the news. You're ready to go eat, and they say, your tap water may be killing you. Stay tuned. Or the movie right before the commercial. The knife comes up, boom, they go to commercial because it's unfinished and you remember it more and you get to stick around. So you want to do a little teasing here. Let them know some of the things you're going to be talking about, why it's important to them in the first 10 minutes. You also want to let them know why they belong there, why they're in the right place at the right time. And just as important as that, is that you're coming across that you're just like them, or you can relate to them. There's something that you have in common. That's critical in the first 10 minutes. Now, also part of this formula, the system, is every 5 minutes. Whether it's an hour or an 8-hour presentation, every 5 minutes you want to have some type of a relevant truth, something they agree with. Whether the desire to become financially independent, the desire to be healthy, the desire to live long, the desire to give back to the community, the desire to spend more time with their family and friends, whatever it is, some type of a truth that they will shake their heads up and down. Just by shaking your head up and down increases your ability to persuade. We've seen this with commercials, where the bouncing ball at the bottom of the screen that's bouncing on the words as it's singing the song causes people's heads to go up and down, and they're easier to persuade. Isn't that amazing? Even when they took college students, and they divided the group into three, and they had these headsets on, and they were listening to music, and they thought they were testing the quality of these headsets. The first group listened to music and a commercial about raising the university's tuition, and this group did nothing. They just listened to it. The second group raised their heads up and down in the yes motion, and the third group went side to side in the no motion. So first group, nothing. Second group, up and down. Third group, side to side in the no motion. Well, they pulled them afterwards about the university tuition, and it was also done before. The students didn't know exactly what they were being tested on. Again, they thought it was the testing of the headsets. Well, the group that did nothing with their head had no change. The group that went side to side in the no fashion actually became more resistant to it. And here's the amazing thing. Those that went up and down in the yes fashion agreed more to a raise in university tuition than before the study. That's why you need relevant truth. Also, every 5 minutes, you need to ask a question. Every time you ask a question, it gets answered, whether you have them do it vocally or you have them do it in their head. And you want some type of example that they can relate to every 5 minutes. Now, every 10 minutes, I want to make sure you have some type of fact or statistic for your analytical people in the audience. That's what they're looking for. That's what they need. Give it to them. Also, every 10 minutes, you want to make sure you include some type of story. Story sell. You've heard that before. Learn to become a great storyteller. You also, every 10 minutes, need some type of testimony from an expert, borrow their credibility, or a testimonial from somebody's life that you changed, who used your product or service, who increased their income. Whatever your product or service is, use either a testimony from an expert that they can relate to, or a testimonial from one of your customers. Every 10 minutes, you need some type of humor. Humor works. Even if you get them to smile on the inside, use humor. And get another yes. Every 10 minutes, you need to get a yes from your audience. Now, every 15 minutes, you need some type of a social validation or a success story. Some way, every 15 minutes, some type of validation from the audience or success story. And every 15 minutes, you need to set up a need. Why they need your product or service. Why they need your tools. Why it will help them out. That's why every 15 minutes, you see this on infomercials, and you should see this in every presentation, there's what we call a trial close, a trial call to action. You're just teasing them a little bit. You're testing the waters, and you're showing them how their product can change their life. Also, every 15 minutes, you need to create dissonance. We've talked a little bit about dissonance. It's one of the laws of persuasion. That's that internal pressure people feel to do business with you. They've persuaded themselves. You're following me here? So stay with me. Every 20 minutes, you need to hit the esteem, ego, or praise button. Now, you did that in the beginning of your presentation, but you need to keep that up every 20 minutes. Help them feel better about themselves. Boost their ego. Help their esteem. Praise them. Compliment them. It's critical to help the doors of persuasion open wide for you. Every 20 minutes, reveal some type of secret about you or about your product or service, something they don't know that really connects you to an audience. You also want to reveal one benefit every 20 minutes, something they're going to get from using your product or service, not the feature, but the benefit. Do you know the difference? Most people say they do, but they don't. What you do is you write down all the features, and right next to your features, you write which means, and that's your benefit. Very simple exercise, but very powerful. And every 20 minutes, you need to motivate them, either with inspiration or desperation. And we'll spend more time with that later. Then as you get to the call to action, as you get to the close, What do you need in your clothes? Well, I've mentioned you need a guarantee. You need to take all the risk. You need to build the value for your product or service so when they get to the price, remember, what do they say? Well, that's it. That's inexpensive. They say it's too expensive. You need to change your presentation. You need another success story. You want to show how it's going to change their life. We're going to input right here the scarcity, and we're going to buffer that with the reward. And they have to be able, at this point during your presentation, to see themselves doing it. And that's a challenge with many persuaders. In fact, here's an example. Network marketers. They show them this business, they go through the presentation, and it's exciting, and the person says, well, it's too expensive, I need to think about it, can you send me more information? What that is I can't see myself doing that objection. They can't see themselves talking to their family and friends. They never say that. Those are knee-jerk reactions. Your audience has to visualize, has to see themselves doing what you're asking them to do. Also during this close, this call to action, you need to vividly, in detail, describe what is the cost of not doing business with you. What is the cost of failure? What's going to cost them if they don't buy your product or service? Now, that's easy in the world of persuasion because people have lost millions of dollars with their inability to persuade. Everyone has to learn persuasion. They're either going to spend millions of dollars through the school of hard knocks, or they can learn the same skills in a couple of weeks. How can you apply that to your product, your service, your idea? And during this process, during this call to action, you need a sense, you need to feel that your audience has given you permission to sell. They want to hear more. They want to know more about your solution because you're a problem solver. You're solving their problem, and this is the point where you give them the solution. They have mentally given you permission to do this. This is also the time where you increase the value by offering bonuses and incentives and showing them that anybody could do that. You see this in infomercials where they show somebody from, better be careful here, picking a state, showing somebody from West Virginia with no teeth and a deep accent saying how they did it. And if they could do it, somebody else could. And that's what people think. Well, if that guy could do it, I can do it. That's the key for a presentation. That is the key for your close or your call to action. Now that you have some type of outline, some type of formula or system to follow, I want you to sit down and think and close your eyes about your presentation. Now, obviously, if you're driving your car, I don't want you to close your eyes. But I want to bring up some things and review some things that you can just really think about. Think about your presentation, think about your product or service, and think about your audience. Hopefully, as a great presenter, you've been recording yourself. We know the faster you talk, the more persuasive you become. Period. It increases energy, it increases enthusiasm. You're going to change your rate from time to time, but your overall rate is going to be fast. Because when people talk slow, it's very annoying. But when you talk really fast about the world of persuasion, why it's so exciting, and learning how to do presentations and finding the system, it also becomes very annoying. So overall rate is fast, but you do want to change your pace time to time. Why? Well, we speak on average 150 words per minute, but we can think at over 400 words per minute. So I want you to practice picking up your pace. You think you're speaking too fast, but you're not. Also, during a shorter presentation, is be careful how much you teach. They're not going to remember everything you teach. They'll remember a few specific points, and that's what you need to focus on. Also, how can you get your audience involved? How can you get them to shake their heads up and down? How can you get them to raise their hands? When do you want them to stand up? The more your audience is involved, the easier they are to persuade. Another successful principle is building tension before content. Teasing. Remember we talked about teasing them? Creating a little tension. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Then reveal the content and maintain your constant energy. So as you're sitting there thinking about your presentation that you're going to give or you have given, did you maintain constant energy throughout that presentation? And here's another shift. I want you to think about your product or service. And hopefully you're sitting there with your eyes closed thinking about your presentation. In the past, and this is a big shift, people are excited to learn, to spend the time to grow and master new skills. Now we're so busy, we're thinking, just give it to us. We don't want to learn it. Just make it as easy as possible. And sometimes what you're asking them to learn is a little too difficult. It goes back to the old saying, you've heard it before, give the man a fish and feed him for a day, teach the man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. Well, that's all well and good, but a lot of times when you look at your product or service, people don't want to learn how to fish. They just want you to give them the fish. It doesn't matter whether that's right or wrong. That is their mindset. So you need to make your product or service idea look as easy as possible, like you're giving them the fish. Very important that you understand that. Another item to review, making your call to action as easy as possible. Giving them that guarantee, that safety net. We've talked about using humor. Are you funny? Do you need to work at that? Anybody can be funny. Anybody can use humor. You could get comics off the internet. Now, you need to pay royalty for these. Comics off the internet that are funny. They just read them and they'll laugh. You need to be able to think on your feet. Many of the improv, if you've ever seen improv, like there are shows on TV that do improv. Many of these local units do improv training. You have to know, what do you do when your joke bombs? When you watch late night shows and you see the comedians and the audience doesn't laugh, they wait, they make a facial expression until they do laugh. When they bomb, they still get the audience to laugh. I remember watching someone, their joke bombed, and they said, okay, here's another one you might not care for. Or another comedian said, well, that joke was designed to get a silent laugh, and it worked. What do you do when you trip on the way to the lectern? Do you say, okay, who planted the banana peel? Do you say, well, I'm a training professional, don't try this at home, or that's a strange place for a speed bump? What do you do? Thinking on your feet, being prepared. What if somebody out in the audience coughs, sneezes, or even passes gas and everybody heard it, and they all look at you? What is your reaction going to be? What are you going to say? Do you say something like critics, or was that an accident or opinion, or, oh yeah, I need to remind myself to pay the gas bill? Whatever it is, go with the moment. Learn how to do this. This is what makes you a great presenter and a great persuader. What if people start walking out in the middle of your presentation? You get nervous, tense, and uneasy? It can't bother you. Humor is always critical. They start walking out? You can use that. Good. Wow. I thought they'd never leave. Or, hey, really, stop. I'll get better. Or you can whisper in the microphone, wow, now we can talk about them. Whatever it is, these are critical components to becoming a great presenter. You have to persuade them of the importance of what you are selling. Don't give them a complete list. Remember the Zagarnik? Here are two of the six ways. Your audience is sitting there trying to invalidate you. So you're visualizing this. They're trying to invalidate you in what you're doing. They're trying to discredit you and saying, this isn't for me. This wouldn't work for me. That might work for other people, but that doesn't apply for me. That doesn't work in this state. That works for other industries. That works for other people. How can you plan your presentation so that never comes up? What is your big promise? What problem are you solving? If you're not sure they're going to stay, what can you say to get them to stay? How can you keep them from leaving? You always want to talk about the results, the problem you're going to solve, the promise, maybe revealing something unknown or new, or some of the testimonials. Remember I mentioned previously that you want to solve objections before they happen? If they're trying to discredit you, you want to solve that before it starts to happen. The reality is, I know you don't like to think about it this way, but your presentation in a lot of ways is like an infomercial. And you should probably watch infomercials. Most infomercials fail. They have a very high failure rate, but the ones that are working you see all the time, watch them and notice the formula they're using. Notice every 12 to 15 minutes they're doing a call to action and showing the phone number. And the reality is your presentation could be like an infomercial and should be like an infomercial. What's going to compel them? What's going to cost them not using your product or service? What emotions could you use to get them to take action? What makes you unique? So as you're visualizing this, I also want you to think about, and this is hard for many beginners, is that it's better to have less content and more interaction. It's better to have the emotions going up and down than at a flat rate. You need to have the mindset, as you visualize this, that if they don't buy from you, they're going to lose. You might offend a few people. You cannot worry about that. They're probably offended because they need it and want it, and maybe they just don't have the money to do it. That offends some people. Don't worry if you have a story that works every time and some people might have heard it before. First of all, they probably don't remember. And second of all, if it was a great story, they probably want to hear it again because they've forgotten about it. Customize this presentation to your own style. Build that rapport with the audience. And a big mistake with a lot of people is they rush their call to action. They've run out of time. There's only 5 minutes left. They better hurry and tell their audience what they want them to do, and they ruin it. That is such a big mistake. I've made that mistake many times. You need to know that if your call to action is 15 minutes, you need to shut up at 15 minutes and don't sacrifice your call to action. Don't sacrifice your close. And don't act like you're bothering them or you're inconveniencing them or get all sheepish. Remember we talked about the demeanor change? This is why you're there. Be excited to do it. You still sitting there? You still visualizing this? I can't reiterate enough that persuasion is different than presenting. Communicating is different than convincing. There's a big pay scale difference in what teachers get paid because they teach, they present, and what persuaders get paid. There's a big difference between the two. Can they really see themselves using your product or service? I know I'm bringing this up again, but a lot of people say yes, it's the knee-jerk reaction. Can they really see themselves doing what you're asking them to do? How can you show them the return on investment? Doesn't matter what it costs, it's the return on investment. How is this going to change their income or change their life? What percent of that audience do you want to take action? If you're selling a high-end package that's very expensive, you might be happy with 20%. If you're trying to get them to sign a petition or to donate some money to a charity, you might want 90%. What percent is going to take action? Will you ever get 100%? Probably not. It's something to shoot for. But remember what we said, some will, some won't, so what? Who's next? Because some won't do it for financial reasons or emotional reasons or it's a bad day or they're thinking about other things. Even when it's a no-brainer, not everybody will do it every time. Also ask yourself, as you're visualizing this, what can you say to the audience to gauge their interest? One that works very well is, how many of you would like this for free? If a lot of the hands go up, you know you've grabbed their attention. If no hands go up, they either don't like you or they don't see the value of your product or service. How can you invalidate their knee-jerk reaction? How can you invalidate what is called the itch? This is what I mean. In the world of persuasion, I have a program that I know can have people double and triple their income. And I spend 3 or 4 hours giving a presentation. And I know the itch is going to be, oh, I'll buy the book. But we know statistically that less than 1% of the people who buy a book will actually read it and apply something from it. But they felt the need and they found the lowest price they could find to satisfy that need, that itch, that want. So you need to understand during your presentation, you need to invalidate that. What do they need to do? What's going to happen if they do buy the book? What's going to happen if they buy a cheaper product? Still visualizing? At the very end of the presentation, do you want them to come up to you to go to the back of the room? You want to know the kiss of death? If you want them to run to the back of the room and someone comes up and starts giving announcements, you've lost your energy, you've lost your momentum, and you've shot yourself in the foot. You need to tell them ahead of time exactly what you want to happen. If you want them to run in the back, you don't want any type of announcements or anything to distract them from going back and purchasing your product or service. The reason I did this way, I was just throwing things at you to get you to start thinking about these things, to visualize your presentation, to think about designing, discovering, and delivering the perfect persuasive presentation. It's all in the preparation. It's all about understanding what you should do in the first 5 minutes, the first 10 minutes, putting it all together. Is this a little overwhelming at first? Sure it is. Anything that's new is a little overwhelming at first. But anything that's overwhelming, just break it down into smaller, manageable, bite-sized pieces, and it'll become more realistic to you. When you master the art and science of persuasive presentations, you can write your ticket to anything. You have access to unlimited income. Very few people have taken the time to master this skill. Dig deep, answer these questions, and you will become a powerful, persuasive presenter.